Halifax News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to the BioShock 2 Hour, everyone. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara.
And we do this here show called the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show, where we talk about all BioShock 2 all the time. Isn't that right, Ara?
I like smelling my fingers.
What we're not going to do this show is actually talk about BioShock 2, which is quite a BioShock, considering the fact that this is the BioShock 2 Hour. But that's probably what everyone else will talk about in their podcast, so feel free to listen to one of theirs after you listen to ours, and you'll catch all that news. I don't think either of us care one, two, or three hoots about BioShock 2. Is that right?
You ever wonder why that is?
Why you and I don't care about stuff that everyone else cares about?
No, like, why a finger smells so good.
Well, it really depends where you put that finger, sir.
Well, no, that's true. But if you haven't put it in, like, do you ever, like just smell your fingers just to smell them?
No, usually the finger is a conduit for something else.
I don't know why, I just like the smell of my fingers.
Last night, for instance, I smelled my hand after touching my cat's feet and realized, oh, I should wash them.
Yeah, no.
Sounds like,
that's
or smells
bad.
Like
that's,
he stepped in
that's bad,
but, all sorts of litter.
But it doesn't make any logical sense to me.
Why skin smells good?
Why, like, yeah, like...
Maybe you washed your hands with soap. That smelled good.
No, it doesn't smell like
a nice
soap.
Pomegranate berry
soap. It just smells like my fingers.
Well then, sir.
And then, like, you ever like do it, and then like you kind of get caught by somebody, and you pretend that like you wanted to do something else with your fingers up near your face, not really around your nose. So you like kind of turn it into like a little like brush of the bridge of your nose, or a little like something else.
What you're saying? I've done the finger sneak, but not necessarily because I was smelling my finger.
Gotcha.
All right.
All right.
I did not lead us here.
No, I did.
I just want to be clear about that.
This is one of the mysteries of my life.
All right. Well, there are things we can talk about that aren't BioShock 2.
Or finger related. We actually have a lot of cool things to talk about that are actually video game related.
Yeah. I've lost touch with each one of them at the moment after our finger discussion.
Well, we have letters.
We do. We got email. We've been asking you guys to send a little bit more email. So continue to do that. There's a contact page on the website, or you can email us, Alon or Ara at Chatterbox Game Show. That email will get to us. So there's one letter we got. It's very, very simple. It's a simple question. He noticed that, and I guess we'll give his name here, Nerdstorm. Okay.
Well, I thought it was Nerdstrom.
Well, it could go either way, but I'm going to guess Storm. Do you want to go with Nerdstrom?
Yeah, kind of like Nordstrom.
Okay.
It's more fun than Nerdstorm.
Okay. Well, the Nerds...
And less
Nerdstrom Esquire.
Frankly.
Apparently, he's also a lawyer. So he asks us why we think that... And this is a much better question for you than I. Why we think shooters have gone the route of RPGs, and they have more story elements... And he claims RPG elements, which I'm guessing he means is like powering up and retaining a character that's been powered up throughout the game.
Well, it's funny because the whole idea of a role-playing game over the years has transformed as words tend to transform. And
from like just turn-based stuff to...
Well, the whole premise of the role-playing game way back when, right, was that it does what it says, right? You're playing the role about somebody, and it somehow transformed.
But to me, that seems like every video game that has any bit of storyline associated
Well, sure, right? But the implication being, right, that you're acting out that person's role instead of just, you know, being led through a character's role through a story. It's like you're, you know, okay, I'm the night elf, you know, and I'm going to do what a night elf does in my role-playing game, and I'm going to act like a night elf.
Well, yeah, but you can do the same thing saying, I'm Tony Hawk. I'm Tony Hawk, and I'm doing what Tony Hawk does.
Well, right, but the rub is that, right, like in the Tony Hawk game, you can't be the Night Elf in the Tony Hawk game. You can only be Tony Hawk, and so...
No, but you could be Tony Hawk or one of the 50 other skaters. So instead of classes, they just have personas.
Right, but the point is, without getting too much off track, right? That
this is on track, buddy.
A role-playing game, per se, if you adhere to the original definition of the word,
which was before video games,
was more about describing a broad latitude in how you can express yourself as a certain character, right? And so a game like Tony Hawk, let's say that you can be one of 10, right, pro skaters, is not a role-playing game by the traditional definition because, well, okay, I'm Tony Hawk, and now I'm like Bob Burnquist or whatever, right? And they do the same things. There's hardly any difference between them. And there's hardly any difference in your method of expression of being one of them versus the other. And that's generally why that type of game is not, you know, considered to be in the role-playing world. Does that make sense?
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but it's too minute of a differentiation. Like, to me, so I think of the early role-playing games, let's say pen and paper, because as far as I know, that's the earliest the term was coined, right? Pen and paper games, which aren't just that you're playing a role, because it could have been like fantasy style with elves and gnomes and all that crap, or I mean it could have been space where you're different races or whatever.
Sure.
But ultimately, when you play the game, you have the choice to just, I mean, you've got that dungeon master, whoever, who's telling you what to do. Like, I've never played these things, but I've seen my brother play it. Somebody's sort of guiding the story, but for the most part, like, you get to just do what you want. And so in that respect, you're filling a role because you're basically pretending to be the person with a certain freedom attached.
Right, right. And that was the original intent behind the idea of what a role-playing game was.
Okay. So then they switch into video game land where there's not that much freedom just because, I mean, you're confined by whatever the decisions made by the developer are.
Right, because you have to play the game within the context that's been implemented.
Yeah. Now, pen and paper, you can just be like, I take a dump in the middle of the world, and let's see what happens. How does that affect me? And the Dungeon Master decides, how does that dump affect your game?
Right, right. Well, I mean, like, when a human is basically deciding how the game works as you're playing it, right? It's almost like the Dungeon Master, right, is the developer of the game, which takes place in everyone's heads and with their mouths and with their facial expressions and however crazy they want to get with acting out in front of each other. And it's like the Dungeon Master is the developer developing the game at the same time, which is happening in everybody's head.
Yeah. Right. Now. Which allots a certain freedom.
Yeah, because we can use our imagination.
Exactly.
But
imagination.
Yeah, all that good stuff. Yeah. But
you don't watch South Park, do you?
But I've seen they've got a couple good episodes. Didn't see that one.
Okay.
Anyway, but in today's world, right? Okay, I don't want to sound so anachronistic. Like, not like today's world, but in modern video games, right? You can only kind of experience what's been implemented, right? I mean, like, you can't say, I want to go to, you know, go do ballroom dancing because there's no ballroom dancing in the game, and the game has no vehicle for, you know, allowing you to do things like that.
And so by my definition, which requires a high level of freedom to be a role-playing game, there is no such thing as a video game role-playing game.
A lot of people would make that exact same argument.
And, I have never heard that argument. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Have other people said that?
Oh, absolutely. Especially people who are really into traditional role-playing games.
Oh, like, oh, this newfangled thing, this isn't where it's at.
Right. And it's,
I know a role-playing game. Let me tell you, son, about role-playing.
And so the word has, now, a lot of it has to do with the way a lot of Japanese role-playing games have turned out, which they call JRPGs.
We're talking Japanese video game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I don't know any Japanese pen and paper game.
Because traditionally speaking, and I'm being very broad here, Japanese role-playing games have been structurally much stricter than Western ones. Although Western role-playing games also much, much stricter than the traditional non-video game role-playing game. Yes. So the stricter,
by definition, I think.
The stricter you get, right, the less role-playing game-like it becomes. But because of the influence that Japanese role-playing games have had, and the fact that we still call them RPGs, the things that have nothing to do with role-playing games have become to be associated with the term. Specifically, right, things like experience levels and leveling up and grinding and things like that.
So you think that we called them role-playing games because they shared a lot of similarities, or they shared a lot of characteristics with pen and paper games, where there was experience and it was usually a fantasy style, and I specifically mean like the genre of fantasy that is like elves and gnomes and magicians and all that
stuff.
Right,
although not necessarily, but
That's usually how it was.
Sure,
so, like,
sure.
You get Wizard's Crown, one of the early role-playing games, and it takes a lot of elements from D&D. So they call it a role-playing game, like a video role-playing game. And then, of course, that transitions into all the different games because it has turn-based stuff and all that.
Right.
And so what was once a role-playing game, now the element may have been lost in the new ones, but it's evolved into this totally new thing, which we just use the same name for.
Pretty much. And it's interesting because this is not like... I mean, it's really, it's exactly the same way that language over time changes, that what we thought was a role-playing game before has kind of changed, and there's no deliberate intention for anybody to associate a role-playing game with grinding and leveling up and experience points.
Well, I'm going to tell a very quick story
here. But it's happened.
So when I was a kid, my brother liked these role-playing games. He started on the PC, and I was a little bit too young to appreciate it or even know how to run stuff in DOS and whatever. So he was playing the Wizard's Crowns and the Bard's Tales, stuff like that, early on.
That game drove me nuts.
I never played them.
Bard's Tale, the game's like in like one town.
Okay.
It's funny because... the concept to people who haven't played a lot of the older ones can be a little bit strange, but yeah.
Oh, man.
But anyway, I digress. Go ahead.
All right. So point is though, like I see him playing that game and then, I think Dragon Warrior is where it first hit for me, right?
Right.
On the NES.
Well, that was, you know, very traditional JRPG.
That pretty much became the archetype for me of role-playing game. And so I find this game that is just, it's not action, right? Like I'm used to Mario and Zelda where when I press the B button or whatever button it is, a sword swings or the guy jumps or something happens exactly as I press the button. Whereas in what was put in my mind as a role-playing game, menu-based, turn-based, I say magic, I say attack,
right.
I say run, and someone else decides what's going to happen based on that choice.
Right. That's another characteristic. Turn-basedness has been strongly associated with role-playing games, but not necessarily something that I think was one of the defining elements of the original definition.
Well, now that I put more thought to it, I have a feeling, I mean, I would agree with you, right? But in my head, growing up, and still until now, I associate role-playing game with turn-based. So when I tell people I don't like role-playing games, what I mean is I don't like turn-based crap. But then later in life, people tell me, well, Zelda's a role-playing game. And I think to myself, how is Zelda a role-playing
game? Right.
But they decided it was. So I'm like, well, sure, action RPGs, meaning when I press the button, the specific action happens, those I like, because those are like any other video game
where stuff happens
when I press buttons.
You know, if you really want to get into, you know, semantic category land, like you could, you know, I don't know, you could call that Zelda, all the Zelda games more like, you know, adventure games.
And I would, right? Because there's no leveling. I mean, you get items and you become stronger, I guess, because you have stronger items. But, like, there's no experience.
Well, there's no actual role-playing. I mean, you're Link and you have to do the things that Link does.
Yeah. You can't just make up your own world.
I mean, you could, but you wouldn't get very far.
This is why traditionally I've said I don't like role-playing games, because Dragon Warrior and Final Fantasy are boring-ass turn-based games where I hit magic or run or attack, and someone else decides what happens.
And we'll eventually circle back to our question
when we come back.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox, video game radio, and we're talking about RPGs, and we'll shortly be talking about RPGs and shooters.
And I'm going to take 1 second to mention, I got Game Informer magazine in the mail today. It's probably been sitting in my mailbox for quite a while, but I picked it out of the mailbox just today. And I see this ad, and we have ads on the billboards on the side of the street for UAT, you know, University of Advanced Technology, and I see this ad. Tell me your honest opinion.
Okay, I have not seen this before. He's revealing this to me first time.
What do you think of this advertisement? It's for UAT, the University of Advanced Technology. UAT.edu.
I've seen a variation on this one.
They do a lot of these, like, side page, very tall ads.
Yeah, it's the whole Geeked at Birth thing.
Yes, it's their unified messaging.
What's that on his chest? Is that a tattoo? What's going on?
Oh, yes, the young lad. We're talking a year old.
A tribal
with a diaper.
Tribal tattoo? What's
that? Has a lot of tattoos, yes.
A lot of tattoos. Okay, these are all kind of like
and
melding
it
into one.
Geeked at Birth. Please geek responsibly. You may speak the language, but are you geeked? Here's a chance to prove
it. It's funny because I'm a little – I have a different perspective because I've seen their original ad, which is kind of funny because it just had a baby.
Well, they've got a bunch of different ads.
Well, I know, but the original version of this had like a baby just sitting down kind of like that but with like
sitting on a server, by the way, with cabling in his hands.
No, but he wasn't sort of sitting on a server, just sitting down, and he had like a pocket protector and glasses, right? So apparently, what this tells me is that they've the image is too nerdy, and they're like, let's convey a hipper, grittier, edgier version, and maybe this baby likes to, you know, get into fights every once in a while and go to the bar on Tuesday nights or something.
Maybe. If they let him in.
But it's, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, it just...
I gotta say, I like the ad.
I think like, it's try hard, man.
I'm not much of a of an ad critic. I don't claim to be, and I didn't get to watch enough of the Super Bowl this weekend, but I think it's funny, and it speaks to the audience very well.
I think it's trying too hard.
Anyway, I wanted to mention it because I needed some sort of segue to mention our sponsor,
which
is UAT.
I mean, do they have, like, PC, like, assembly classes or something? Because that's a little deceptive, because they teach things that are cooler than that, frankly.
Yes, at the bottom it even says what they do, and it bolds game programming, because they do teach that. I don't think they teach server building, because it would be irrelevant by the time you leave anyway. Actually, I know it wouldn't. Stick a cable in the back, stick some cables around in the middle, you're pretty much done. But everyone at that school already knows that stuff.
Okay, so I'm going to give out the phone number. If you want to call in, maybe you have a comment on what we're talking about, 866-536-1100 is the number.
And I'm going to go in the chat room right now at chatterboxgameshow.com.
You hear that clicking, everyone? That's what going to the chat room sounds like.
And then there's a click of the mouse over the live chatter room, and I put in my name. I'm always astounded by the fact that nobody takes my name and goes into the chat room and then convinces people that they're me.
Well, we have maybe very moral chatters.
Or we just have a very small group of them.
I'd like to think the former.
Okay, sure.
So let's get back to brass tacks here.
Brass tacks. So we were talking about RPGs, and I was telling my quick story of how I had it stuck in my head that turn-based boring-ass games like Dragon Warrior and Final Fantasy... By the way, I played Dragon Warrior all the way up until the end, although I never actually beat the dragon at the end.
You didn't beat it?
Didn't beat the dragon at the end, but like I played it to the dragon and couldn't beat him, and I was like, all right, well, I'm done with this.
How did you manage to play that much while... thinking it's so boring?
Well, I didn't at the time. And then I got
only in retrospect you think it's boring.
Well, I mean, that was early on in my life. I think I was 12. Seriously. And then life goes on and I see more games that are this turn-based and I'm like, "Wait a minute. Wait, this isn't fun." It's like when you watch a movie that's really bad, but you want to keep watching just to say that you lived the experience or completed it. Like I hate walking out on a movie even if it's horrible. Like honest to God, I got what was essentially gay porn from the library at school once, because it had the guy from Kids in the Hall in it, Scott whatever.
Okay.
Who I just, like, obviously Kids in the Hall has a lot of gay themes in it, but there was some movie with him in it. I was like, I will get this from the school library. Scott Foley, you say? Foley. Anyway, okay. So he's one of the super gay guys in the Kids in the Hall, and is that just...
One of them?
Well, okay. There's certainly a range of gayness
okay,
in that show.
That's beyond my comprehension, but okay.
Anyway, so I just pull it off the rack and I watch it, and it's just showing the hardcore gay acts, and I had no idea that's what it was about. I was like, well, I started it, I have to finish it. So I'm watching this gay porn, which is not something I'm traditionally into. It wasn't flat out, like, had story. It just decided to show the scenes that are normally cut out of other movies, which was exact depictions of gay porn.
Okay, so sex. You are a closer. That's a good attribute to have.
So anyway, my friend who works at the library, I was like, hey, this movie's pretty much gay porn. So like, it's cool that you have it. We are IU, and they have the Kinsey Institute and whatever. It's like, but I don't know if you want it on that particular shelf. Right. Maybe you want it on a different shelf. That's all. And so they did take it off the racks.
And yeah, put it to the gay porn section.
Off the school, I guess. But my point is, I struggled through and watched this gay porn, which was...
Okay.
Much like Dragon Warrior.
Okay, so we've covered quite a large expanse in the space of 2 minutes.
True stories here, folks. True stories.
Now, I can see that. I mean, I've played a lot of RPGs, and I play a lot less now. And certainly, I play almost no JRPGs just because I've played so many JRPGs. And they're so formulaic that I've just gotten tired.
They're all identical, right?
Well, I'm not going to say they're all identical, but I will say that they are so formulaic in general.
A few years ago, and when I was at E3, that year when it was like a weird E3, you know, not the big thing.
Right.
Anyway, we went into the Microsoft, thing in their hotel room, whatever, and they showed off a few games, and this is where I saw Halo Wars for the first time, and they also showed this other game that, like, the guy who kind of worked on Final Fantasy was working on this RPG,
what,
also
Sudeiki?
For Microsoft.
No, it's after Sudeiki.
Dude, I don't know.
It?
And I don't remember the name of the game either. But I looked at it and I go, why would I want to play that? It's the most basic form of RPG I've ever seen, except it's on the 360. I think it was going to be the first RPG on 360. Yeah.
But the thing is, right, there's always 12-year-olds.
Is it 12-year-olds who want to play those games? I thought it was older kids.
Well, no, there's more than that, but there's what I mean by saying there's always 12-year-olds is there's always the
person who hasn't played it.
The person who hasn't played that it's new, right, for. There's always the person who can't get enough of it no matter what. Crack addicts. There's also the type of person who and there's quite a large group of these people that just don't have the dexterity to play a lot of fast action games. And so the turn-based nature of games like this is much more comfortable for them. They feel like they can play these competently, and the fast action games, they just don't have the dexterity to play at.
You know what's ironic about this? I'm telling you how much I hate turn-based games.
Yeah.
And earlier in the show, I mentioned that I want...
And you love some turn-based games.
Yeah, and it's not so much the turn-based. It's this particular type of game where it insinuates there's action. Like, so Final Fantasy VII is a perfect example. It's the last RPG I can remember playing, and it's the only one I played that was sort of in, like, this current age of games where there were very, very elaborate visuals, more than just large, you know,
right.
2D explosions.
Right.
You know, you summon a certain elemental thing, and, like, some big dragon comes
in. Because the only thing worth seeing in 2D are explosions, right?
Essentially. So, but, like, some dragon swoops in, and it takes 30 seconds for him to shoot a beam of breath fire over these guys, and he chars them, and it's cool, and then you summon it 30 more times during, you know, your playing of this game, and it's no longer cool.
That's the whole Final Fantasy, like, I don't know what they were thinking thing, where you have to
sit through all of this.
You have to watch a 30-second attack sequence, basically.
But my point, like, I hit magic, or whatever it is, summon, or whatever the command is that brings them out, and it's cool to look at.
Right.
Once,
right?
But it's also like, let's say I had 10 of them and I pulled out the 10th one. Like, I'm sick of it.
Yeah,
I want something that's fun. Yeah. I don't want to just stare at crazy stuff happening.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone's actually documented, right? Like in Final Fantasy 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever, like how many times throughout the course of playing the game you actually have to sit through summons repeatedly. Like, I bet it's in the thousands.
For some people's long games, yeah. And so what's crazy is I've gotten back into Civilization Revolution after I took a 3-month hiatus, and I did want to say something about this. I might save it, but I'm very much into that game, and I'm convinced I could probably just play it forever. I wish there was a little bit more. It was a little bit deeper sometimes once I've played it a lot. But seriously, I could play that a lot.
And that's a mark of a good game.
When there are battles that take place, I don't even want the battles. I just want it to tell me who won and how many guys do I have left.
Yeah.
I don't even want to sit through it.
Yep. And that's what happens when you're interested in the long-term game, too.
Yeah, but like that
the visuals, the whole rigmarole just doesn't even matter. You just want to see the outcome.
But that has some amount of strategy. And it's like, I can't just grind forever and then take out the big guy. Because if I do that, he's getting bigger the whole time as well.
Right.
So that game, like, you've got to be good. You've got to be careful.
Yes.
It's not a particularly hard game, so I don't want to say you've got to be, like, good.
No, but you have to make optimal decisions to a certain extent, otherwise you'll lose. Right?
Yeah, I can't just sit forever until I'm stronger than other people, which is what an RPG is.
Right, the beauty and the failing at the same time of the RPG format, the JRPG format, is that you can grind, no matter how bad you are, you can always grind to content or success.
Yeah. So are we going to talk about shooters now?
Yeah, we'll bring it around.
Shooters and RPGs.
We'll bring it around the corner.
It takes us half an hour, but we get to the person's question.
Sure.
All right, we'll be right back.
Hello, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one!
Woohoo! We're totally back! It's the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show! Call us at 866-536-1100 or head over to chatterboxgameshow.com to interact online.
All right. So somewhere along this long and lonesome road, we got a little bit off track of a question that we were addressing.
Let me read that question again.
Let's do
it. Would you rather read or you want me to do? I'll take care of it.
Go
I do
it.
The reading. I generally.
You're a good reader.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You're very kind. Hello, guys. Love the show, by the way. Just wanted to pose this question as I find myself sort of confused at the present state of a certain genre of games. Question. Why are shooters being developed more and more with elements of RPGs right now? And even more interesting to me, what game or series of games prompted this so-called RPS revolution?
Which I've not heard that acronym before, by the way.
Neither have I, but we understand it means role-playing shooter.
Okay. So here's...
Did Einhander do that, by the way?
What?
I wanted to... in my mind, I just wanted to pinpoint Einhander as the one.
No, don't do that to me.
But I don't think it actually had
Don't do that to me.
Elements.
No, and it's not a shooter in the sense that he's thinking either.
Are we talking first-person shooters?
Well,
because I was thinking shooters.
I was thinking first-person shooters because... Because
he says RPS? Like
well,
FPS?
Because...
Because both of them are doing it.
It's sort of, yeah. But I think it's mostly because games like that have come out in as of late, like Borderlands and so on, have a lot of strong like leveling slash RPG style elements in them.
Okay, well let's do that then. Let's go that route.
Now it's interesting because Mr. Nerdsturm wasn't really specific about not only what like you're talking about. Right, like classical shooters or first-person shooters.
He doesn't understand. You and I are old school.
Yeah. Neither was he specific about what elements of RPGs he was talking about. So we can only assume. So I think this question is best phrased and makes the most sense if we assume that he's talking about first-person shooters and leveling up slash experience points type of structure from RPGs.
Okay.
Now, having said all that...
How many games actually do that? Borderlands does.
There's... I haven't... Ironically enough, I don't play a lot of FPSs, so I am actually not qualified to do a total catalog recall of what games
I think Modern Warfare did that. It you can... It definitely had ranks and experience, right? So the more you play, the higher the rank you get. And the thing is, I never played either of these games a lot either,
yeah.
So I don't know what it gives you, but there were these quirk things that you could get to make
right.
your character better.
Right.
And then, like, what was weird is you might be in multiplayer and have something when another guy didn't have it, and
right.
so it's kind of unbalanced.
So, anyway, I have two answers to this question, okay? The first one is, no, they're not just doing it now. You're just noticing it now. And two, there's a lot of elements... That right, I'm going to take liberty. A lot of RPG style elements that really, really mesh naturally with a first person shooter style game. And I think the only reason why they're particularly popular or obvious now, as compared to maybe 5-10 more years ago, is because they're okay. I just lost it.
Okay, well then let me jump in.
This will happen by the way, guys. This is my whole brain just like reboots for some reason.
Let me argue a bit. I don't know if that has been happening for years.
Okay, it has.
You just
haven't noticed, right? So here we go.
If we're talking about ranking.
No. I'm talking about
or leveling. I mean
RPG overtones slash yeah, like leveling experience point systems.
Dude, that does not happen in a lot of first person shooters. It has recently, like he suggested.
Right, but it is not new. It is just more noticeable now.
In a first-person shooter.
Right. So,
can you give me one example? That's all I'm looking for.
Okay, so a lot of the From Software games, right? Kingsfield.
Which are not first-person shooters?
Well, I would say that it's almost indistinguishable because it's essentially, it's a first-person, it's the structure of a first-person shooter in an adventure world where you also have swords and magical items.
Dude. Just because it's first person doesn't make it like a first person shooter.
Okay, so what
nature of the game is very, very different.
Right. So now we get into the question of what defines a first person shooter. Because the only thing that is in my definition of that word is that it's an action real time game that has a first person view.
Come on
so
now.
What else?
You can't separate From Software stuff from things like Doom.
Well, tell me, what is an essential ingredient of a first-person shooter?
First of all, they tend to allow multiplayer, where everyone is on the same level,
so to speak. They do tend to. You're right. But I wouldn't say that defines that word.
Well, no, but I'm looking at it from his scope. He's talking about a certain type of game.
Right, but the thing is, right, like a game like Kingsfield has elements of both, and so it's definitely a hybrid. You can't argue that it's not a hybrid, because it's in real time, first person camera, full action game.
I agree with you. I do. From that, but I'm thinking of his question, which is just about, he's talking about first person shooters, and I think we need to take the liberty and say it's a specific set of games like Wolfenstein, Doom, the games whose name I can't remember,
Time Splitters?
Time Splitters games. Yeah. Like, and Halo, of course.
Right.
And the Red Faction. Like, all those are first-person shooters. You could be multiplayer. It's very frenetic. You're killing lots of people. You got different guns. It's always guns, except you might have a knife somewhere.
Right. Is GoldenEye a first-person shooter?
Definitely.
In GoldenEye, is Armored Core a first-person shooter?
I would not categorize it as such.
Okay, you know I'm building a trap for you right now.
Of course.
So structurally, I find very little that...
I feel the need to be Nerdstrom Esquire's proxy here.
Okay. Anyway, like, we can go down this road forever, right? Like, the fact of the matter is that the genres aren't strictly defined. They're very loosely defined, and there's a lot of crossover. Okay, so... I think we should just leave it at that and start talking about more interesting things, but not the whole topic, just that part of it. So
let's pretend that what he's saying is based in truth, that first-person shooters are suddenly getting RPG elements.
Sure, sure. Now, I think the reason why – I'm going to slightly rephrase the question to make more sense out of it.
Okay.
I think that the reason why most of the popular first-person shooters are borrowing certain RPG elements like experience points and such – is because they've begun to exhaust all of the interestingness of the strict original, right, first person shooter structure, which is, right, which is like Doom or Quake or something like that, where it's like, okay, there's multiplayer maps, it's, you know, you're just in a level, there's weapons, that nothing really is retained from level to level.
There's vehicles.
Now there's vehicles, right? So a funny thing happens, right? If you look at the history of games as like a commercial endeavor, right? Somebody makes a game and it's a hit game like Doom, right? And so in commercial terms, right? Everybody who looks at that, they're like, wow, that's making money. We should do that. But we want to make even more money than they did, so we should do that and maybe like one other thing, right?
Yeah. Well, and this is great. Like, we've seen a consistent evolution of these games. So let's say Wolfenstein was the first one I saw. It wasn't really the first person shooter-esque game.
It wasn't really like a hit like Doom was, though.
It was definitely a hit in its own right. But it doesn't matter. My point is, it had certain elements, but what a lot of our listeners might not even realize, which is weird to me. It's like kids these days haven't heard of Madonna. I came across a girl who hadn't heard of Madonna, by the way, in my life. This was like 8 years ago, which is crazy. Anyway, they probably don't realize that the idea of vertical aiming was non-existent in Wolfenstein,
right.
Heretic,
right.
And Doom. Like, you just pointed left, right, and if they were above where your gun was pointing,
right,
then it just assumed you were pointing directly at that ghoul or whatever.
Sure, sure.
And then with one of the games from id, I can't remember which one it was, they I think the big one was Quake. Like, Quake implemented the full range aim, where you could then move your gun vertically.
Right.
Or aim vertically.
Right.
And that was a big evolution. I mean, that was a game changer.
Right.
Just along with, like, slanted floors and stuff.
Right.
Which didn't exist in Doom either.
So this is interesting. I've heard somebody say this once. I don't know where I got this from, but it's been said that genres really are nothing more than when enough people decide to copy the same idea over and over.
That makes sense.
And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I think what's happened with a lot of popular genres, and the FPS genre is a great example, is that right? There's this initial core structure or game design, and a bunch of people copy that. It gets copied and copied and copied and copied so many times that there's no other choice, right, but to make additions to it. And I think that it's just the evolution of the genre has just gotten to the point now, right, where it's like the next logical thing was to incorporate RPG, some RPG style elements, because one, they fit nicely, I think, and two, it's the whole idea of leveling and getting experience and grinding is a structure that allows people who suck more to play, which makes it more accessible.
I hadn't thought about that aspect, but you know, I would say that RPG elements like the leveling could fit into essentially any game. Like, you want to develop
it
in there,
and it has the same effect too. If you suck, because like I said, that's the beauty of it. If you suck, just play more. Even if you don't really get better, you will in the game.
All right, we'll be right back.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
We are back, and what we do occasionally on the show is mention our favorite place, uat.edu, the website for the University of Advancing Technology, where you can go and learn game programming and all this different stuff that was in that ad I was looking at with the baby who's tattooed. I don't think you have to be tattooed to attend, by the way.
No, but
it's not a requirement.
But even edgy people can apply.
Yeah, there's actually a reasonable mix of people. There's still not a lot of girls, but the number's growing. But it's not just all supercomputer
geeks. The girls have to have tattoos.
Oh, well, yes. No, that's – I didn't think about that because I wasn't the girl going there. But yeah, that is a requirement.
Okay, so –
Also piercings.
Very good.
At least one.
Very good.
In a non-ear
In
location.
The septum.
Yeah.
Very good.
All right, so we're pretty much done with this RPG talk. But I think to sum up the answer – to Nerdstrom or Nerdstorm's question. That's six consonants in a row. I mean, that's rough. Basically, evolution. And I guess you'll see this in more than just shooters. And by that, I mean first-person shooters or traditional shooters or any other game. What happens is some idea comes along or some technical implementation, right? Like the 3D style game, first-person style game, came to be because of technology was able to handle it. And it expands past just horizontal looking to vertical looking to multiplayer, which wasn't in the original. I don't think it was in Castle Wolfenstein at all.
No.
Multiplayer. I'm sure it was hacked in later.
Yeah.
But, you know,
you don't even like, I mean, did you jump in that game? I don't think you even knew you jumped in that
no
game.
Jumping.
No
jumping.
No. No climbing, yeah. No jumping. No
Doom, I think, allowed jumping, though, because you could jump over.
Yeah, yeah. You could jump.
Anyway. So Doom had multiplayer, and then Quake had primarily multiplayer and vertical aiming. And then you get an increase of guns, and you get all sorts of variances, right? And then you start adding like warping into it. Like not all games had warping where you're here, and then all of a sudden you're in a different part of the map. What really comes down, we should talk about first-person shooters one day, what makes a good first-person shooter, which is weird that you don't play it a lot, but what got you into game design, professional game design anyway, was designing first-person shooter game levels.
Yeah, isn't that ironic?
Yeah, it is.
It was.
Did you play that game?
No.
Unreal?
No, I mean, little. I played it about 10 times less than I actually worked on it.
Wow.
I mean, the tools, anyway.
That's so weird.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't. It seems weird, right? You can't. You got no time to play games
games. Usually when you're making a game, it's you're going to make the game of the type that you're interested in.
Right.
Right. And, I mean, unless you're thrown at a company that just tells you what game to make, but
well, there's,
on your
there's,
own.
There's two perspectives, right? There's value in both of them. And one philosophy says, you know, oh, if you're going to make such and such kind of game, or if you're going to make a game, you should play as many games that are similar or close to that so you can get the most ideas that you can. And then there's the Yu Suzuki philosophy, which is I don't play any games because I don't want to be tainted and influenced by what other people are doing now. I want my influences to come from more interesting, possibly more compelling places.
And
there's value to that too.
I agree. It's just weird to me that you would spend so much time with someone's tools of a specific game and then not even play it much. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just surprising.
Well, it's not like, it's not like the whole concept of an FPS was foreign to me. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, you know, you understand the basics of the game. So if you have a good idea of what you want to do, I don't think that there's necessarily a requirement that you have to do an evaluation, right, of exactly how people are doing things now. And you know what that reflected in the map that I made, because it was a really unconventional map. And, you know, some people liked it a lot, but people who played the game frequently didn't like it because, you know, it didn't adhere to a lot of the conventions of, you know, the people who played multiplayer games on a frequent basis. Anyway.
I don't know enough about the level to even tell you. But I know that level design is super important to first-person shooter games. And a lot of, like, non-game design thinkers don't quite understand it. They think it's all just, like, the weapons and the mechanics of it. But level design is huge in the success of a game and just how,
right,
how fun it is to play.
Right. Well, I don't like to distinguish too much between level design and just the design of the game, period. But
there is a difference. Yeah. I mean, this question of guns and balance and all sorts of things that go into the game.
Right, right. But game,
totally aside from level design.
Right, but level design I consider to be a subset of the game design, because in designing the level and the area you play in, you are designing what the game is.
Yeah, and what's going to happen.
Sure.
You're sort of adding a narrative.
Sort of.
So
definitely sort of.
So I'm going to talk about Civilization a little bit.
Okay.
Just because, well, I want to. So there's an achievement in Civilization Revolution for the Xbox 360.
Now I'm getting scared.
Okay. So there's an achievement that says, win the game, and for those who aren't familiar with the game, based on my previous discussion of it, there's four ways you can win in Civilization. It's either by beating up everybody else, getting a whole lot of money, and then like building a big bank or something at the end, getting a lot of culture points, or something else. Doesn't matter. Technology. Oh, yeah.
If you do any of those, you win.
Getting a bunch of technology and then getting your, you know, building a spaceship and going somewhere. So there's four types of victories. Any one of them will win the game.
Okay, so escape the planet, right?
Beat everybody else, get a lot of money,
beat
get a lot
up everyone
culture.
Else, or get the most money. Something like that.
Yeah. So anyway, there's these four ways. And then there's an achievement that just says, win the game, doesn't matter how you win it, one of the winning events, by the year 1000 AD.
That's pretty rough.
That might not make any sense to you if you don't play the game, but that's really early on in the game.
Well, I don't think anyone's won the world in 1000 AD. So.
Well, that's true. But so I
not for long, anyway.
Playing the game normally, I get to like the year 1800. I'm like, oh, I'm finally at the point where I can start taking over some other dudes. And then Rich, of all people, texts me, because we played online this weekend, and I'd never played online ever. But I told him, hey, we should totally do it. And so I sat down and I played a ranked match with people who weren't Rich, and then in the middle of it, he went online. He's like, "Oh, Alon's playing Civ. We should totally play online, like we said we would." So then I played my first game with him,
yeah.
And the next day he texts me. He's like, "Dude, I totally got that win by 1000 AD." And I was like, "What, bastard? That's like impossible." And he tells me like the just quick idea of you know, use this particular civilization, do this. I was like, "Oh, that could work." So I tried it this morning when I didn't go
so
to work today.
It wasn't cheating. It was
no,
legit.
It's not cheating. It's just, but I mean it. It's not like just do really well. It's one particular civilization has one skill set,
yeah,
that is particularly good at this type of thing that can happen early on. So I was like, I should try that. And I totally beat it in the year 200 AD.
Wow.
Like, killer.
Impressive.
I did that today. I think technically it said that I finished 250, which means on the turn 200 and then some time happens.
Right.
So, so that was awesome. But another part of it is that I finally got to play online. And there's a few different game types for online, and I'm going to play a lot more. Like, he left midway through the game, and I had to beat everybody else, you know, without him. It was just us against the computers. But I want to invite our listeners. Don't invite me over Xbox. Like, I've talked about it on the show before. I want to play some people online. And so they leave a message because, like, they see me playing Civ, so they send a message. Like, first
right.
of all, if I'm in the middle of the game, I'm probably not going to want to leave it.
Right.
But what I want you to do is email me, letting me know of your interest in playing online. And there's a teams method where you can play 2-on-2. I bet I could get Rich to play.
Do you like to schedule it beforehand?
Yeah. Saturday is perfect. Saturday is the day. Saturday afternoon, like before 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I was wondering how that invite stuff worked, because one time I was really bored. And I was playing 4-3, and I was like, I'm just going to spam all my friends who are playing right now and ask them to come play 4-3.
Well, that
didn't work.
That happens a lot.
Yeah, but it didn't work. But it's funny because, yeah, that must happen a lot, and then also there must be a lack of responses.
Well, of course.
Almost quite as
much.
Well,
a lot of people don't have the game that you have. But I would like to play, but if you invite me over Xbox, like, I'd never check my messages there. I don't really care about communicating over Xbox because it's just not my style. Email me and say, hey, I'm interested in playing. Let's arrange a time. And I'm telling you that Saturday morning / afternoon is the time to do it. If I can get Rich awake, then we'll join in on a team. And I want to say we'll crush you, but I don't think he's any good. I will do my best to crush you and let him, hopefully not allow him to die so that we can pretend that we both together crushed you and feel good about it. So that's my challenge to our listeners. Email Alon at chatterboxgameshow.com and let me know that you want to do that. Saturday's good. Saturday morning.
You know what I find increasingly amusing as the years go by?
What's that?
We have about 8 million more ways of communication now than we need.
That's true.
And it's...
Well, it's all just email in different packages.
Kind of, right, but it's kind of annoying because they'll be like, the one guy is like, oh, get online. Get on the IM. I'm like, dude, I don't have the IM installed right now. Why don't you have it? I'm like...
Which IM client?
Which
IM
client?
Get on this voice client.
Why don't you... you can email me. You can yell across the room. You can phone me. You can text me. You can Twitter. You can send a message on Facebook. You can use other... There's
dude,
Xbox.
You could use the Xbox to read your Facebook messages.
There's... I mean...
You could send Twitter over
really?
Xbox.
Really? All of these?
Yeah.
Do we need all of these?
Everyone's got to have their own.
I don't know.
All right. Well, it's the end of the show. Thank you so much for coming on, joining us for this session. We'll be back next week and even the week after that.
And even
after which point I will have become a year older, by the way. All right. So that's it. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.